Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Hi, welcome to the Idle Red Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Chris.
And this is going to be another installment of our Warriors. And people unfamiliar with the Warriors series is where we take a real-life warrior.
And we ask them to come out and play it.
Yeah, so today's spotlight will be Ajax from the Warriors. It's where we take a class of warriors from history and we pull out some things that are not necessarily unique about that class but are interesting and talk about them. So these are actual warriors. So you could see like previous installments have been Hoplites, French Foreign Legion, Roman Legionary. But today we're doing pirates, and I guess you could argue that there might not be warriors.
Mm.
But hey, we're just going to say the warriors. We did have some fighting. So next up will be abusive husbands. some interesting things you might want to incorporate in your game. If you're playing
abusive warriors, angry people.
Drunk and loud. Something special about this particular Warriors episode is going to be two, in that, of course, we're going to be talking about pirate ships, but we didn't want to just tack it on as one element that's interesting about pirates, and we're going to do an entire episode on pirate ships and stuff around that. Mm-hmm. And there's some interesting facts in that episode.
Water. They sailed on water.
Okay, man. Some things a little bit more interesting than that. So we just don't want to give it all away. We've got a couple elements that we're going to talk about, and first up, we're going to be talking about license to ill, or the fact that there are privateers. Pirates are often privateers and vice versa, just depending on where they are. And what is a privateer, guys?
Someone with a writ of marque given by a foreign government. So I guess you had England, Spain, and Netherlands kind of vying for
France
the
as well.
Yeah. And France, yeah.
Oh, and we should say thank you for the reminder, because we're going to be talking a lot about pirates and the age of piracy.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we're not going to be talking about online pirates or Somali pirates so much. And, of course, there's also Asian pirates, but we're going to be focusing primarily, on the European New World age of piracy pirates. So you've seen Black Sails, and you're kind of like them.
Mm-hmm.
So
once the New World was discovered, countries were giving writs of marque to crews, to captains that that then were setting out to seek their fortune, basically sanctioned by the governments of those countries, and also kind of in an attempt, because Spain was the first there and kind of becoming the richest from the New World, so England and France were kind of sabotaging what Spain was starting to settle and were already doing, and it was at first sanctioned by their home governments.
Mm. It was the original trolls.
I like that aspect where, they're doing illegal things, but it kind of depends on who you're doing it to, and they're getting sanctioned by the government. I mean, you could say that your average soldier is getting sanctioned to murder people. So it's not necessarily unique to pirates. But that's definitely something that you could do a lot with in a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're looking at like a Shadowrun game. One government is sanctioning you to run for them. But if you get caught, then you're just a pirate.
Yeah,
right.
And then that's kind of fun that you have the distinction of the terms, where if you're working for England and you're raiding Spanish ships, then the English consider you a privateer, which is a fantastic thing. Whereas if you're a Spaniard and you're getting raided by them, then you're a pirate. And that's horrible. That's very, very bad.
You know, I wonder if they did a lot with that in something like Star Wars, when, you have people like Han Solo. Did you say Han Solo or Han Solo?
I say Han.
Han?
Because that's what they call in the movie.
Oh, okay. That's a good reference point, I guess. Han Solo, where he's a smuggler, but I'm wondering in some of the comic books or the novels, if they really made use of that, where, the rebellion or the Republic is sanctioning him to continue being a scoundrel against the Empire.
That part of that? Did he smuggle for the rebels?
No. Okay. Not in the movies. But obviously I didn't pay too much attention. I didn't even know the name. Is it Solo or Soy?
Sulu. Sulu. Captain Sulu.
No, they do hire him in the first movie. People are like, oh, now we're talking about Star Wars? They hired him in the first movie to, smuggle. They didn't even hire him to smuggle. They just hired him to transport Obi-Wan and Luke.
Yes.
But, then he just kind of seems to give up his smuggling life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you were talking, which one of you was saying, like, when you look at, like, some really, really famous explorers, but you find out they're really pirates, or, like, Sir Francis Drake.
Right.
Really...
Yeah, I was surprised, and I don't know if it's revisionist history thinking, or if that's basically, you know, you considered anyone that was going to take advantage of the wealth of the New World and newly established trade routes and kind of sabotaging the work of other countries, if you would, yeah, consider them a pirate, because from their point of view, from the, you know, from Spain's point of view, I'm sure England and France were full of pirates that were, you know, sabotaging what they were doing. But we're still kind of, we see them, we're taught in grade school and history books that there were explorers and they were, you know, discovering the New World, but in fact they were,
I don't see. Maybe not these days.
Yeah, well, not the, like, definitely not
Columbus.
These days.
Yeah, yeah, hey.
Certainly getting a bad rap.
Yeah.
But that's part of it, is in the whole colonial era, all of the countries were fighting very hard against each other to be the first, to be the fastest, to get to the richest. So even if it was on terms of just exploring, if you weren't actively sabotaging other things, you could be considered a pirate by other countries because you're taking whatever wealth should be theirs from exploring these new lands.
Or the people that were actually on those lands.
Well, you know.
Yeah, but I like that. Like, certainly you could be a pirate, and there's certainly an incentive to just be a pirate. One thing, if you're a regular crewman, we found out when you're breaking down the shares, and we're going to get into that a little bit later in the episode when we talk about the Pirate's Code, but your privateer crews tended to get less than a pirate crew, or a lower share or a smaller share of the booty.
We should make a distinction as well that even though privateers were a common form of pirate, not all pirates were privateers. There were some people who had no allegiance to any country and just sailed around and took stuff.
Yeah, and some would graduate from being pirates to privateers, or vice versa. You know, they become independent contractors.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a nice way of putting it.
But I think one thing that is appealing about being a privateer is it kind of allows you to play, like, two types of games.
Mm-hmm.
You can have, like, the safe home port where you have to follow a master, so maybe they've got the politics there, or then you just break free and go into the foreign waters, or if you're in space, you know, the foreign
space
part of the galaxy, then yeah, it's more roguish and dangerous, and you're your own boss and that. So it allows the players and of course the game master to have two different things going on. So you can flip. You know, people maybe get tired of always being pirates, and it's just like, oh, okay, well, I got to raid again. But yeah, he's like, oh, let's go back. You know, kind of like Francis Drake, and it's like, okay, now I'm going to go back to England. I think he had an affair with the Queen.
Oh,
is that? Am I remembering that correctly?
I didn't see that.
Drake is around Elizabeth's time.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
I think, well, maybe just a rumor. Yeah, check your TMZ. Yeah, but you can do like or empire building or something like that. You go back to your colony or that planet, and you're a respected person, and then you go into the other planet or the other colony, and they'll hang you.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
well, I think that's a good way to look at different kinds of campaigns. If your group is largely self-motivated to where they'll say, all right, there's a site over there, let's go get it, and they can decide on what kind of missions they want themselves, then just kind of the independent contractor, that pirate is good. But if there's a group that needs more guidance or needs more input as to what to do or where they want to go next, then that kind of privateer format can work really well. You're getting orders from the crown, go raid this colony, go explore this place.
That's
it can lead to a more varied game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, I know myself as a player, I can go back and forth, like, how motivated I am. Like, sometimes, like, you know, I want to sit down and have the game master have a plan and follow that plan because, yeah, it's kind of like I'm participating in a movie or something like that. And, you know, maybe I don't. Or sometimes, yeah, I do want to create something and, you know, be the catalyst or the springboard for a story. So if you... Yeah, you can do either or. You can do both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, guys, I'm checking out today. Can we be privateers? let's go back to England.
It was a rough day at work.
Yeah, you got something for me? Oh, are you in privateers now? Yeah, yes, please.
And, you know, there's no reason that you can't jump back and forth between the two. I mean, it wasn't always people who were hired by England to go and be privateers. Sometimes it was a pirate who decided to sign a letter of marque.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking this age of sail, too, you're away from your bosses and the country for months on end.
Yeah.
So communication is as quick as you are.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just reminded of Ninjak, Valiant, a comic book character, and... that premise is kind of ridiculous. It's actually a really good comic, but at least the newer ones are really good. But he's a British secret agent ninja. So, you're like, what? He's like James Bond ninja kind of thing.
Right on.
They're kind of playing with his role a little bit in the more recent comics, but the initial premise, he's like an independent contractor, secret agent. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of like works for MI6, but MI6 has to kind of hire him. Well, you can do stuff like that. I mean, it's kind of the privateer idea. Mm-hmm. So when he's not being like a secret agent for MI6, then he's on his own doing ninja stuff or whatever. I think he actually just kind of went on vacation and did superhero stuff. But yeah, you could do that. You don't have to just be like a pirate, but just taking that concept of the privateer, and you're like, well, you're an assassin, you know, kind of like a James Bond, but then, hey, you're also kind of freelance as well. Mm-hmm. It just depends, you know. So you don't have to be like, hey, I want to be MI6 or CIA and always following orders. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, you hire me for specific jobs and that. Yeah, because James Bond, like, yeah, he's always just getting orders. But what if you had like a James Bond, he's got his missions and then he goes off, or an Ethan Hunt, mm-hmm. they do their missions for their organization, but then they also do the stuff on the side, mm-hmm. and they get their own team together. Well, actually, Mission Impossible does really good. Maybe they overplayed it in some of the and that because they really liked that idea because it was really good. And then they go, hey, let's repeat it again and again. Yeah. Where they, yeah, he does. Oh, we think you've gone rogue, so he has to go get his other team together. Mm-hmm. I just didn't realize until I had seen all the movies like together in a pretty short succession how often they redo. They did that from the first movie,
right?
Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah. So when you're talking about like Ghost Protocol or Rogue Nation, you're just like, hey, you're doing it again. But it's really
rogue
good.
Again.
Yeah. He says he's innocent. Oh, why should we believe him?
Oh, that Hunt.
He says that every time.
Every time
he's right. Maybe it's someone else. So. Yeah, so that was one element, the privateer. Mm-hmm. And we actually did a poll about pirates a while ago. We were hoping to record this a little bit sooner after the poll. But one of them was about what does a pirate not need? And one thing that stuck around was like the peg leg. Mm. Or the idea that they're missing a limb, mm-hmm. yeah, and we think that's sure, yeah. Well, you don't even have to be a warrior to lose a hand or a leg or an eye, but yeah, it's certainly iconic for a pirate. Well, you could be born without those, even. Yeah, right.
But, born a warrior,
but yeah, born maimed. But that's our second element is maimed. I think of pirates, like Long John Silver.
Yeah, it's the iconic image: hook hand, peg leg, one eye.
Yeah, to quote Russell Crowe, if you're playing the pirate, you need the fucking patch.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's like, say what you will about Russell Crowe, the man, but Russell Crowe, the artist, the actor, is really good.
Yeah, he's got the patch.
when he was preparing for Gladiator, he took a bunch of his buddies and was kind of like the alpha male. Like he wanted to be, I got to be a leader of men. Mm-hmm. So he took them on like I think in Australia, mm-hmm. like a motorcycle trip. So it was kind of like he was the leader of the pack, mm-hmm. you know, as in preparation. So
didn't involve any invasions or anything. That's good. I was wondering where that was going.
Okay. Yeah, they ran some drugs. Sons of Anarchy.
Overthrew an empire. You know, it's good fun.
And we were saying we were doing research on the patch. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it was you, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All the good ideas are Jeremy.
Okay.
I make stupid jokes.
Why is it in the middle? So, yeah, what was that? What did you find interesting about the patch?
Oh, yeah, they had talked about if you're raiding ships and you're going to be, this is the Caribbean, it's going to be a sunny upper deck. If you're wearing an eye patch, you're kind of protecting your dark vision of one eye. So when you go below decks, you can actually, you're not blind for mm-hmm. a few minutes and giving free attacks to everybody. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. And you'd said like even like modern military, there's different techniques that people use.
Do modern military people wear an eye patch? Or
I think they figured out you could just close the eye.
Yeah.
You don't actually need the patch.
That's the thing, like, I mean, I thank you for the factoid, but I can be honest, I'm skeptical. It's just, I don't see many other warriors who go into places also wearing eye patches. I don't know if it was that common among pirates. And also, like, when you switch one eye over, like, everything is blurry. I'm not saying no, but it sounds weird.
Right.
It's really just, like, pink eye was probably was a huge. If you ever come to Japan, you realize just how epidemic pink eye is.
But I'd heard something similar, that it was used for aiming, for, like, mm-hmm. aiming cannon, or for using spyglasses mm-hmm. and such, as because instead of constantly squinting one eye, you just have one covered up, and it's easier to...
Again, why you wouldn't just...
Yeah, exactly.
Close the eye. So, no. Because it lets it not have depth perception for the whole day just because I want to use the telescope.
But that's not to minimize that being a pirate was a dangerous job.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, I guess sailors in general, I mean, it's a dirty business. And one of the key reasons why things would get infected is because a cloth would get in. I think I watched Master and Commander, an excellent movie. And they were really worried about that when the doctor gets injured. And they're looking for the piece of fabric that goes into the wound. And then they find it, and then they match it. And he's like, oh, we got it all. Because if that gets in, that's where the infection sets in. And then they, like, sawn off your leg or your arm.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, and then part of getting the infection as well, because being on a wooden ship, if there's any kind of combat, it's common to have splinters. That gets lodged in there. Infection comes quick. And, and that's why you were talking about peg legs and... arms. It's not that their hand was bitten off by a shark or something. It had to be taken off because of infection.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And replaced with an awesome hawk.
Yeah, but it's a nice reminder of nice. It's a grisly reminder of how dangerous. Like you said, how mm-hmm. dangerous the pirating life is, and it's a nice visual. I think you need a lot of like help to establish that something is dangerous. I mean, people sit down in the game like, oh, we're always having combat and that, but you're like, hey, this is the world, all of you have something missing. I mean, it's not, and you didn't choose to have it missing, like in Cyberpunk, it's gone. I mean, you can almost, what's gone on your body?
Mm-hmm.
You almost make that like the standard, you know?
Right.
A toe? All right.
My self-esteem. Yeah, actually, that is something that I struggled with before when I think about pirate games. And it extends into science fiction as well as the ship, is just how dangerous it really is. I mean, there's, in a normal fantasy campaign, you're out in a dungeon somewhere like that, there's always a chance of getting killed, but if you get dropped down to under 0 hit points, your buddies can drag you out, or something, you can run away from the combat, but you can't really that effectively run away in the pirate thing.
Right. You're on it. If you're boarding a ship, I guess you could jump overboard and try to get back to your ship.
Exactly, but if your ship is damaged, it probably can't sail as quickly as the ship that's doing better, and when that ship sinks, that's it.
Yeah, it's funny how we play these games with combat, but we don't really have an understanding of just how dangerous some of these combats are. I mean, have you ever seen Gangs in New York? And that first fight, that first gang brawl, that is so terrifying when you think about it. Like, when you're watching that, I thought they did a really good job of setting up how, like, terrifying something like that could be. And you watch something like Master and Commander, when they have, like, an engagement and the cannonballs are flying, and like you said, like splinters, not just people might be laughing, oh, like a splinter, like you step on a splinter. No, like when a cannonball hits, it doesn't hit you, but the ship explodes in like these chunks of metal or chunks of wood that go shooting out shrapnel. And just how anybody survives one of those combats, it's unreal.
Yeah. And how just being cut by them is enough to really endanger your life as well, because again, of the infection.
I mean, that's a really good thing to play up, in that you get, oh, I'm 0 hit points, quick, give me a healing potion and but here, yeah, it's like, okay, let's see if you're actually infected. We stopped the bleeding, but
roll for gangrene.
You get a fever and things like that. That was real life, man. Still is.
Scurvy.
Oh, yeah, we should make that a key element. Yeah, vitamin C.
Right.
And the absence of it. Yeah.
But they talked about, our association with rum and pirates, of course, because of the region, they've got sugar in there, they're making rum, but also for keeping the water supply from becoming stagnant or contaminated, they actually put rum in the water, and then eventually lemons or whatever fruit they could find to prevent scurvy. So they, you know, there's the survival element of being at sea and not maybe having a safe port for the
foreseeable
future. Oh, yeah,
the fresh water. And that is terrifying. I remember driving through the desert. And, you know, I didn't grow up anywhere near a desert, but I was driving the modern Route 66.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you're driving through, like, Arizona and that. And that was terrifying to me. not terrifying. Playing it up a little bit.
Screaming the whole way. It's an hour drive.
Like, do we have enough water in this car? Because what's going to happen if the car breaks down? You're just, but yeah, same idea. It's just like you get becalmed and you're waiting for the wind to pick up, and
right.
your rations go lower and lower. The fresh water, you can play that up in space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'm just watching an episode of Clone Wars, and Darth Maul and his brother get, I think they're stranded. Oh, don't spoil it for me. But you're like, oh god, they seem pretty calm about it. But I guess if you're Sith Lords,
yeah, they've got the sports, you know.
Yeah, move the ship. Yeah, but I mean, just imagine playing a game where your spaceship loses power, and that's the session.
Right.
Trying to get, or your ship is like, there's no wind, and you don't have a magic user to create winds or whatever, and what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it plays like a really claustrophobic game, trying to keep the crew calm, trying to come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's one of the interesting aspects of running on a pirate ship, is that there is a crew involved with. You have to worry about morale as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they're professional military units, although they could be, but in a lot of cases they weren't. They're privateers. Mm-hmm. They signed on to get
booty. I'm here for the party and the booty.
Or some for action thing, but none of them really signed on to sit around and slowly starve to death on the ocean, so you have to worry about how they're going to
react. I guess they didn't read the fine print.
That's what I joined for, but I don't
know. I'm here for the starvation.
And of course, you have the opposite. You know, you have a situation where there's no wind and you're running low on rations, but you have the storms and other natural events, things. It's a scary, scary place on the ocean.
Well, since you mentioned the crew, I mean, it's a nice seg into our next element, and that's the Pirate's Code.
Mm-hmm.
And we should make a clarification here, because we didn't actually find, like, a Pirates of the Caribbean. Do you say Caribbean or Caribbean?
Han Solo. I say Caribbean.
Yeah.
I think I use a different, if it's adjective.
I think it's Pirates of the Caribbean, actually, not Caribbean. So you watch Pirates of the Caribbean, they talk about a Pirate's Code, and you think it's like a communal, like almost like a pirate nation code or something like that, or a code between pirates. But we couldn't really find that. But of course, each ship would have its own code. And I think they found about six examples of intact codes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that. But I think that's really good. A contract. And that's something when you play pirates or privateers, is you do have to worry about the NPCs of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really important part of the game. It's interesting what's covered in the code. I mean, it gives you the right to bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
Also your share.
Of the booty.
And each person who signs the code gets one share. And then the captain actually didn't get that much more.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they would get two shares. That seemed to be it. And then people like the quartermaster, I think sometimes the quartermaster would get two shares,
mm-hmm.
or would be on the same level as the captain. Sometimes they'd be just below, like a share and three quarters, a share and a half for some. Yeah.
Not to go too far away from the code, but that the hierarchy of a pirate ship was something that surprised me a little bit in looking it up, in that the captain was not generally the most powerful or the main guy on the ship. He was usually there for combat purposes. When the ship gets into combat or into trouble, that's when the captain takes over. But in large part, the quartermaster and the bosun were the main guy, the leader of the ship.
Oh, and I found out we had a little disagreement on how to pronounce that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bosun, as you say.
I'd say bosun. Yeah, I think I say bosun. I don't know that I'm correct.
Or there's the botswain.
Mm.
And they're actually both correct. I think one is the bosun is the newer pronunciation.
Oh. Yeah.
So I think it's an American thing.
Huh. Mm. Lieutenant.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, so the botswain or the bosun. Yeah. You can see that again. I'm referencing this movie a lot, even though it's not technically about pirates, but Master and Commander.
Mm-hmm.
But you do see the hierarchy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, people they're interacting with lower people. Yeah.
Mm. Right.
As opposed to interacting with the captain. Or if you watch Black Sails, you see how important the quartermaster is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. In the code, if you sign the code, everybody has a say, or in some codes at least, it's written in that they can vote on certain things. Affairs of the moment is how it's referred to in one code.
Hmm.
And they also elect the officers.
Yeah. for the time, it was an extremely egalitarian kind of society compared to a lot of the monarchies that were in power around the world besides that.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about like the rough pirate life, but it was probably preferable to a regular sailor's life in many ways. And one of them is, the code. And,
The only downside is getting hanged after you get caught.
And not necessarily. Although signing the code, some people were reluctant to sign the code because if you were captured and they would see who signed the code, and if you didn't sign, you had a better chance of an acquittal. So they actually like gave you a proper trial.
And that's something that was not uncommon as well, as being captured and forced to work, especially people with specific skills like carpenters or doctors or
navigators. In demand, man. We see why a carpenter is so important on a wooden ship,
It's like
really? What is it? Wood? Oh, sorry.
But that's also some options that you can use for your characters or for the crew of your ship. That I mean, are you here willingly? Have you been forced into servitude? Was it maybe originally that you were captured and forced into it, but you came to like it, you wanted to stay along? Or conversely, if you don't have a carpenter and you happen to take a ship that does have one, what do you do about that if they don't want to join? That can be a moral quandary for players.
Yes, yeah, right. that is good. I mean, you could be playing like decent pirates. Like, what is it in Princess Bride? He gets captured, right? Will gets captured.
Oh, yeah, the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah, by Dread Pirate Roberts. And I guess, he threatens him every day, saying, I'm going to kill you in the morning.
Yeah, right. Most likely.
Wesley most likely kill you in the morning.
It was Wesley, right? Not Will. Yeah. Will is Pirates of the Caribbean.
Ah, yeah.
Orlando
Bloom's character,
Right. Wesley was much better.
He did, but I thought Will had a really good line. Orlando Bloom doesn't get a lot of credit for his acting, but I thought he did a really good job with Keira Knightley. He sold me on his love when he calls her Miss, very polite or something, and she goes, oh, you don't have to say that, Will. How many more times? And he's like, one more time. Just one more time. I don't know. It's in the beginning. And then the movie goes, then there's like fantasy codes. I mean, they're actual codes to work with. Another thing that we didn't mention is they also have, they'll pay for your funeral or compensation for getting injured and maimed, and different parts would be worth a different value. So even that's all like put into the contract.
There are a lot of morality parts of codes, and those varied greatly between the different kinds of ships. Some ships said no gambling at all on board. Some allowed women on board. Some strictly forbade them.
I thought it was pretty... some allowed... I mean, there definitely were female pirates. Big contrast between Asian pirates and European pirates, or like the Caribbean pirates, is that Asian pirates would bring families on the ship.
Yeah, and I think there's also a distinction in some cases between female pirates and women on ships.
So, as well. And some didn't want children on the ship.
Which, that's understandable with all that maiming and splinters and things.
Don't think that's why. I don't take care of them. But probably it'd be interesting what age they are defining a child. Because people would serve really, really young, even in the Navy.
Yeah,
they would have like children. What we would consider children serving in the Navy, but what is it? Winston Churchill said the naval traditions are rum, sodomy, and the lash. I think unfortunately the younger crew would get a lot of that sodomy.
I think there still might be a distinction there. I mean, I said it as a joke, but I think there is a difference between having children as like to be a child. My family or a child that I bring along with me versus, say, like a cabin's boy, which is a young person, well, that's still a child that
that's part of the crew. That's a good point. And they would also have rules about fighting, like you don't fight on the ship. But then they have like kind of the protocol is like, you know, if you have a disagreement, then next time you report, you go and have a duel or something like that. You do it off, but you don't do it on the ship. And then, of course, what the punishments would be for violating the...
No candles after dark.
Stuff like that.
It's just good, you know. You don't want people to shoot at you.
It's good. Good rule. Good rule to have. Man, it can get dark pretty early. I guess if they're around the equator.
And you're on the ocean, there's not much horizon, so it's probably pretty late.
Yeah, that's true.
The musicians. There are a lot of musicians on board had a lot of special roles. on it. There's some different kind of rules about how many days off they could have, about when musicians would be able to play and take it, because they would play at night when all the other soldiers were relaxing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Another specialist crew member aboard the ship, mm-hmm. which again, very important for morale.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think we had some fun. We didn't get too much in the details when we played our D&D pirate game, mm-hmm. but it was fun working with the crew and figuring out the shares and not being able to completely boss them around, but having to entice them to serve.
Right, right.
Because, yeah, they can, especially if you're in port, they can just go, well, I'll go find a better ship to serve, or a better crew or a better captain to serve.
But I was looking forward to the different makeup of the crew, because mm-hmm. there are a bunch of just sailors that you got from a previous ship, and then you'd also hired on about like 30 half-orcs. As well, too, mm-hmm. to be like kind of the toughs of the crew, and I was imagining somewhere down the line their goals might cross or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe like in a TV show or a book or whatever, you're gonna have that arc, you know, the conflict between the two, and then
and they all become brothers at the end.
Yes, and then there's a combat. And he goes, he bleeds. Well, I was gonna say he bleeds red, but he actually bleeds green. He bleeds. Yeah. I mean, do not bleed. Yeah.
But that's something as well, is even if you're not talking where you have fantasy races, like your group of elves or orcs on the ship, like that, there's also, you know, cliques that form in politics within the ship, mm-hmm. and how you have to manage those as the captain, actually probably more as the quartermaster.
Yeah.
All right.
This is separate from the core, just you saying about the different cliques and different things to worry about, but also sailors are very, very, very superstitious.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Factoring in superstitions and what you need to do, which can play really well, and especially like a fantasy game.
Yeah, when the superstitions are real.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we need to make a sacrifice, or because we're becalmed, or something like that. Mm. Yeah. I think if you're going to play, a strong recommendation if you're playing pirates or privateers, regardless of what setting, fantasy, real, science fiction, modern, it is to like sit down and have the players work out the code.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had the roles. Like, I think the quartermaster was an NPC.
Right.
But, yeah, the captain was a player and bots. No, I don't think we had a...
No, it was only the captain was the player. And everyone else was kind of pseudo in charge of the ship, and the quartermaster had been hired on. So
yeah.
He was beneath the player characters.
Yeah, but it was nice with the quartermaster working with that. I mean, it allowed for a really nice NPC player dynamic. So, which we got to factor in the game master. I need to have fun too playing the game, and it's not always just describing things. But giving them really, I think like the crew gave you as the game master, in addition to all the other NPCs that you had, but it gave you like stuff to do, like interactions and joining in and weighing in on decisions.
Yeah.
But very organically, and like, you know, as like of course the quartermaster has a say in what's going to happen, or the entire crew has a say. We have to have a vote on the captain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember, you guys gave speeches and everything like that. It was good fun.
Yeah. And just, yeah, and you're not married to the actual codes. Yeah, because Pirates of the Caribbean did have, like, as far as we can tell, a fake code or a guidelines. Mm-hmm. What was it? What's the joke? The more guidelines, as
yeah,
we
the
say.
More guidelines. Yeah.
Yeah. But you could do that. You expand it out, and you have your pirate kingdom, your pirate nation, or whatever, mm-hmm. and they just have like a larger code or whatever.
Yeah, we had that in the game. The pirate civilization, pirate place, sound city. Yes, city. That's what I was looking for. The pirate city had its own code. But that's something that I just kind of came up with my own. And I'm actually, anybody who's listening to this, if you have input on this, I'm very curious, because I looked online but I couldn't find an answer as to whether or not pirate cities, pirate establishments, had the same codes as they carried on ship, or if it was kind of pets off. And obviously a privateer would be, because they'd have the rules of whatever country was in that settlement. But mm-hmm. if it was a proper pirate haven founded by independent pirates, how did they do that? I don't know. And I'm curious. So if anybody out there knows, please hit us on Twitter and let us know.
I imagine that they would be like laws. Because a code is like a contract. You sign it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But a law you don't really sign. You're just like, hey, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You come here, you're covered right. under that.
Mm-hmm.
The way I did in the game was that people who owned ships had a vote in the city, because that was basically their power revolved around having a navy to keep themselves independent.
Yeah.
There's kind of, I still carry that democracy thing through, but I don't know if it's real or not. Well, I just made it up, so probably not.
All right. And I guess our final one is just that you have to, I mean, you are playing a criminal.
Right.
So you need to factor in crime and punishment. And as we said, like, the code did have like what would be the punishment for the different charges and that. And some of them, of course, would be on penalty of death. I think like falling asleep on your watch could be on penalty of death.
Really? Yeah. Wow, that's harsh.
Yeah. But it depends. I mean, if you don't like it, I mean, you don't sign the code.
Yeah, true.
Of course, if you get captured and
you're forced to sign the code. Sleep all you like.
Yeah. And you signed it. Yeah. Broke my arm. But
I'm actually curious. I didn't see much on the punishments. Were there what were other levels of it?
The lash. You get whipped.
Walking the plank.
Yeah, I don't know if there's all that common.
That one seems like that's a capital punishment, eh? That's
that one. Oh, they would maroon you. Marooning is quite common, form of punishment. So and when you read about like pirates, like the actual pirate stories, and a lot of like these captains, they'd get marooned. You're like, why would you maroon them? Why wouldn't you just kill them? But I guess there was some, I don't know, I guess there's some respect in the marooning. They give them enough supplies. Like, we even see that, it wasn't pirates, but Mutiny on the Bounty, which is actual true story. Mm-hmm. But Bligh, they didn't kill Bligh.
Right, they set him adrift. Yeah,
yeah, they set him adrift. Right. And what's the Fletcher Christian is Fletcher Christian sets Bligh and those officers that chose to be with Bligh adrift. Yeah, with some supplies, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, marooning was not something under Treasure Island, but like a legitimate punishment or a legitimate way that pirates were dealt with or sentences were dealt with.
That's harsh. I'd take execution over rooting.
No, but you still have a chance. Why would you do that?
I think you're in an island out in the middle of nowhere and like, you just see the ship disappear off the high and it's just like, oh, I'm screwed.
I saw the detail that they would often maroon people with a loaded gun. So it was kind of assuming it was a death sentence.
Is that legit? What they said in Pirates of the Caribbean, whereas they give you a bottle of rum and a gun with one bullet.
Right, I see. I saw the detail of loaded gun. Yeah, they often left people behind with a loaded gun just in case you didn't want to fight for survival and hope for rescue.
Dark. I like it. Yeah. In a fantasy campaign, it's like one scroll with an explosion.
Yeah, fireball on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be an interesting balance that the kind of captains and the crew had to maintain is the system and the code with which they operated, but then what they did to ships that they attacked, because they had to have a reputation, they had to become infamous, they had to be violent and feared by people that weren't pirates, by their victims, so that they would just roll over and accept the piracy. But the crew had to still see them as fair and at least honest to the code, people that would give them a fair shake and would guarantee their share and would work in their favor, but they would see acts that they committed to kind of, bolster their reputation to make them seem cruel and horrible.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely wanted that reputation so that ships would just give up.
Right.
Yeah, and just, okay, we'll give you the ship or whatever, just because, of course, if you have the reputation, like, if you fight back, you're going to get slaughtered. So, that is an interesting balance. And you hear, like, some of these, like, fearsome pirates, like Blackbeard, a real guy. And I think he was also pretty tyrannical with his crew.
Mm. Yeah, he seemed like a proper psychopath.
Yeah.
He's the one who put black powder into his beard and set it on fire so that it would like sparkle.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, we're
not spark. Sparkle's not the right word. Just
want to feel fabulous sometimes. What can I say? I think so because he would look more menacing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that was Blackbeard. Yeah, I'm not sure.
What? How long do you have that beard for? If you set on fire every time you put the back on,
it would smell. Just burning hair does not smell good.
No.
But probably considering some other stenches.
But then again, you're on the ocean for months at a time.
Yeah.
It's probably might be an improvement.
Yeah. God, can somebody light some hair, please? Just like incense to them. They're probably like right after the battle, I smell this like gunpowder. Oh, heaven. Oh. Yeah, and blood. That smells better than the...
But that's something that the pirates would really go for, is to have that kind of reputation to get people to surrender. Because, as we said before, a single cannonball is enough to sink a ship if well-aimed. So you don't want to get into combat if it can't be avoided. Ships are extremely valuable, too, so you prefer given up and so you just get a free ship as opposed to a pile of sinking wood.
Yeah. What is, it's not a pirate book or series, but The Expanse talks about boarding really well and how it's like you really try to avoid it. And it makes a lot of sense because one thing, you don't know what's right around the corner.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, it's just the way they talk about it is like, yeah, you just don't do it.
Yeah, if you don't have an eye patch on when you go in there, it's black, you can't see anything.
Well, half of your helmet is painted black. So
yeah.
Well, you know, half the helmet, you just kind of slide it over. Hope nobody hits you hard and it spins around.
Well, wait a minute, wait.
No, but I think the psychological effect of pirates was a very important part of their personas, trying to be as intimidating and frightening as possible, and but also balance that with being a fair and just captain to your crew, at least to the point where they're not going to try and kill you. Or, hey, be like Blackbeard, be a complete tyrant and kill anyone who speaks up against you.
But, I mean, if you're a pirate, when they capture you, I mean, you get a trial, but they're going to hang you. I mean, not a lot of pirates, like, retired. Mm-hmm. I mean, or sorry, it's funny, like, some did retire with a lot of wealth, and then was killed. Yeah, a couple of years. Yeah, like, they catch up to you, and then they kill you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some who had really nice lives afterwards that went to work for various navies and enjoyed their retirement.
I think one of, there was a group of those Spanish ships, they're called plate fleets, and those were like the treasure ship, the Spanish treasure ships, and there's like one pirate and his crew, they took one of those ships, and that was it, they were set for life. And yeah, a lot of them career. But I think he was caught up with him and hung him. But I guess if you were part of the crew or whatever, and you weren't infamous, then you could retire. Out of life. Well, that'd be ocean. Fun to play.
Right. Call the ocean adventure? No thanks. I've got a pile of gold. Retire.
So to sum up for the pirates, the elements that we really liked, thought would be good. Now, and we should say, these elements you could use in a game that it doesn't involve pirates. As you can see, like, yeah, you could have one-legged non-pirates.
Right.
Sorry. Really, if there's anything that we want you to take away from this, yeah. It's that anyone can miss a limb.
Hey, we are not ableists. I just wanted to let you know.
You can be born with no limbs.
So the elements that we think, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things about pirates, but the things that we really took away as things that you should definitely play up in your games or bring to other types of games. One, the pirateering aspect, the kind of, you know, as Jeremy said, the right of mark from one nation, but you are a criminal or a pirate in all the other nations. The idea, like kind of the maiming, which also we talked a little bit more about the health or just the dangers and how you can play that up. And also the pirate's code, which probably the centerpiece. I mean, it's not unique to pirates, but it's pretty special to them. And that's something that could be used in many types of games and definitely should be used in any pirate game you have. And finally, like, yeah, the crime and the punishment and the, kind of that balance. Because, yeah, if you're just whipping all the crew, you know, because they're violating stuff, then, you know, are they going to rise up?
How
but,
before they whip back?
But the crew has to see you as strong. And again,
yes.
I really recommend people watch Master and Commander. It's not about pirates. Watch Black Sails, which is about pirates. but in Master and Commander, you really get a sense about the... It's in the Napoleonic era, which is a little bit after the Age of Piracy, but just what it's like to, you know, live and work on a sailing ship. And just like, yeah, the relationship that the officers have with the crew. I mean, you can't be their friends because they'll see you as weak. But they need to see you as fair.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, thanks for joining us. If you like this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Get the word out. And certainly Chris had that question. Are you familiar with kind of the pirate's code that encompasses like a pirate nation or a pirate city? We couldn't find anything credible. And what did you think? Is there something that we missed about pirates that you really think is interesting? And if you're going to say pirate ships, please watch the pirate ship episode. We know that the ship is actually a really important element of being a pirate.
And water.
Yeah, which is our third episode. All right. Bye.
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 Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG. The one true source for RPGs. We'll be right back.
See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.